So I'm going to talk a little bit about loving kindness and equanimity. We'll have a chance to do some walking meditation, doing loving kindness, and then come back and continue on. So going back to mindfulness for a second, one of the ways we use mindfulness, or one of the benefits that come to us from being more mindful, is that we can see the distinction between the direct experience and the story, the interpretation, the elaboration that then comes. It's not that the story is always incorrect by any means, although it certainly can be very, very deluded in fraught with, you know, fear and anger, just out of habit, things like that. But we need to be able to see the distinction that this is what's actually happening, this is what I'm making of it. And we then have a choice whether to say that reaction or that story is suggesting some action. We can go with it or not, because we have clarity, we have presence, we have understanding. And we're always interpreting in some way, and that is also enriching and enlivening, and there are ways we can see it where it doesn't drive us. When I was in Wisconsin the other week, when I was teaching the non-residential retreat that I was also there to teach, aside from going to the prison, the woman who was driving me to the retreat, we're driving along, and then we make a turn, and across from the center that they had rented, you know, just like this, for the retreat, just across the road was this huge field of flowers, huge. And so she's driving down the road, and she makes a turn, and she glances over her shoulder at the fields, and she says, "Oh, look, a field of allergies." It goes right down the driveway, which I thought of because I'm really allergic. You know, so look at how differently we see things. It's also true what she said, although perhaps rather specific. One might also make some effort to include the beauty of the scene. But mindfulness gives us that opportunity to see what the mind is creating, constructing, how we're interpreting, how we're holding things, taking them to heart, identifying with them, adding to them. So it really clears this enormous kind of space, spaciousness for us in our lives. It's really quite fantastic. And practices like loving kindness allow us to kind of experiment and in some ways tell a different story than the one we might ordinarily be accustomed to. Like, I'm so incapable of anything, or whatever it might be. We all have certain habits and ruts and familiar patterns that are just very conditioned. And so what we're saying, in effect, in doing something like loving kindness practice is, I'm going to see what it's like to step out of that conditioning and look at things from a different angle. Look at myself from a different angle, look at others from a different angle, look at the nature of connection from a different angle. And so that's very, very much the spirit of the practice. It also, they say it is, and I think I started this yesterday, this is like a practice of generosity. It's generosity of the spirit. It may not manifest in any way materially, but it certainly manifests through our attention. Something I'm very fond of talking about these days, although culturally it doesn't always make sense. Like, I tell this story in Madison, and people looked at me like, and I said, you know, I grew up in New York City, and just the way one is there is that you're taught the appropriate thing to do is if you're in a building with an elevator, is that you go into the elevator, you don't look at anybody, you don't smile at anybody, you turn around right away, you stare at the door. Maybe you're lucky and there's some numbers that are lighting up or something, so you have something else to look at. But, you know, so I told the story in Madison, everyone was like aghast, like, ooh, this is a terrible way to be. I don't know about Seattle. But it's a conditioning. It's a very strong conditioning. So now I have this sublet that I spend some time in New York City when I'm not in Massachusetts, and I find myself going into the elevator and spinning around, looking at the door, and every once in a while somebody says something to me. And my first response is like, ooh, like, what do you want? And then I can remember, oh, I'm not going to lose anything by paying attention to that person. Maybe they're lonely. What if they have no one else to talk to today? Would it harm me in some way to actually not be just running over the meeting I'm planning on going to and everything I'm going to say, or I anticipate they're going to say, and actually gather my attention and just focus and be there? So it's not very deliberative like that. It's really very quick. But it's like a remembering, oh, right. This is what I care about, is that kind of responsiveness to people. This is the person I want to be. That's a habit of old. It's very quick. And because we practice in the formal meditation, sort of shifting how we're using our attention, how fragmented it is, bringing forth the values we really care about, that's why it becomes very quick in life, because we practice it all the time. So one of the things that's difficult about loving kindness practice, I think, is that it's really very subtle. It can sound so gooey and kind of sickly sweet or saccharine, and you got to force yourself to smile at those people in the elevator, and it's like morning, and you hate the morning, and you have this really bad day ahead of you, and yet, you know, they're so annoying, but, you know, you've written 15 books on loving kindness, and so you have to what a burden, you know, it's like so phony, and but you're smiling because, you know, what if they ever found out your name? And, right? So, it's not like that. It is much more that sense of, oh, right. It's remembering what we care about, remembering we can access it, opening in that moment to being different, whether toward ourselves or toward others, and just seeing. So it really is this sense of experimentation. Of course, one of the things we see very strongly are those ruts, you know. And we need to not have a feeling of condemnation toward ourselves. I was too afraid to go forward. I was too timid to speak up. You know, I'm awful, I'm bad. But just to recognize we're continually, it's like we're stretching in different directions. And there will be fits and starts and mistakes and beginning again and beginning again and beginning again over and over again. It's just the way a path is. So loving kindness is the sense of connection. It's an acknowledgement of something that actually is. And that's one reason why it's not so phony and weird, because it's actually empowered by the truthfulness of it. We're not trying to make something be that isn't actually already there. The truth is we do live in an interconnected universe, that the way we tend to be with self and other and us and them is a construct. That's what's made up. And we can be really lost in it, or we can have a kind of bigger awareness to see that it's a construct. And that the truth is much more about how connected we are. It's just in the nature of things. So you could say loving kindness is the responsiveness to that understanding of connection. that someone else's life has something to do with ours, that we actually share many things, the wish to be happy, the vulnerability to change, to loss, that we all get lost in ignorance to different degrees, for sure, but we do get lost in ignorance, and we create suffering for ourselves and for others. These are all actually true things. And so we respond in a way from that place. So, you know, as I said earlier, there are these four qualities that are usually talked about together, of loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. And you certainly can see the first three as qualities of generosity, because they are about that kind of sharing and opening and relinquishing, you know, not holding and not possessing, owning, closing down that we might normally get engaged in. And so sometimes we use the idea of generosity as a way to further understand these qualities and the role of equanimity with them. So with loving kindness, there really is this kind of expansiveness of attention, this inclusion rather than exclusion. It doesn't mean that we like everybody, or that we approve of them, or that we just kind of sit around and don't try to do anything to make things different. It doesn't mean any of that. But it's almost like our worldview is not so us and them with the other, you know, or self and other with the great big other out there. It's a very different kind of view of life out of which we act very differently. So it's like a generosity of the spirit. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, like any kind of generosity, we can be involved or engaged in what feels like a freely given gift, or it could have lots of other layers to it, like I'll give you this but you give me that, or I'll give you this and thank me profusely, would you? Or I'll give you this and this will absolutely make all the difference in your life, and you will be a completely happy person from now on. And so, you know, we get involved inevitably through the force of habit in lots of these other dimensions which aren't actually a kind of what we would recognize as generosity when we look more deeply. And so it's very subtle. As these qualities are talked about, they're talked about as having a near and far enemy. The far enemy, as I'm sure many of you know, is the complete opposite. And the near enemy is a quality that's close enough so that we could get confused unless we look really carefully to see the distinction. So the far enemy of loving kindness is aversion, which is anger and fear, as I talked about yesterday. And clearly it's the opposite. You know, we can't include at the same time we're pushing away. It just energetically, it doesn't work. The near enemy is the tricky part to understand, and that is attachment. The near enemy of loving kindness is attachment. So attachment, the word attachment can have many meanings in English. Sometimes we use it in an extremely positive sense. Affection, nurturing, bonding, intimacy, closeness. You know, and that's not what's meant in this particular context. All of those things are very good. What's more meant, sometimes actually when I'm trying to understand the nature of the quality of attachment, I actually substitute the word control in my mind because I think it's really close to what is actually being meant in this context with that word. It's very much that sense of, I'll give you this gift and, by the way, here are your new obligations. Which doesn't have to be that crude. It can be in itself very subtle. But it's a different thing than a freely given gift or a state of loving kindness. And it's not that it's considered bad or wrong or terrible, but look at how fragile that state is. I will love myself as long as I never make a mistake. I will love you as long as you respond in just this fashion, or you get well, or whatever it might be. So it's very tricky to first understand the state of attachment and then be able to distinguish it, but we can. And it's said that it's the force of equanimity, which is balance. It's the balance born of wisdom that allows us to practice loving kindness without just spitting out into attachment, to be more balanced, to have more of that. And another way of saying equanimity is like peace, the quality of peace that comes from wisdom or understanding. So we can have more of that peace that helps us actually sustain loving kindness, because we don't always get thanked. Or sometimes we do make a mistake. We don't get the conditions that we think we need in order to have that sense of love or connection. But can we have it anyway, is the question. And so that's part of the role of equanimity. It's like, gives us a very big playing field in a way. Really opens up because of that quality of balance. So that loving kindness can actually be loving kindness. It doesn't have to spin out into these other things. And so that's really a very strong understanding we bring to bear. And as I was saying, when we practice loving kindness, you might not ever even hear the word equanimity, but it's there. It's got to be there. Otherwise, it will so readily become attachment. And even if we don't know how to name what we are doing is infusing equanimity back into our being in order to move from attachment into more of a state of loving kindness. So attachment is likened to one of my friends, you know, the Pali word for loving kindness is metta, M-E-T-T-A. One of my friends once likened it to metta with an edge. And it's so easy. You know, as I said, I teach a 7-day loving kindness retreat at IMS every year. And, you know, we go through this whole progression of different beings we offer metta to, and sometimes I'll see somebody afterwards and they'll say, you know, I had this friend and I was offering them loving kindness and day in and day out, and then I left the retreat and I ran into them and they were no better. And, you know, and I thought, I gave you a week, you know, why aren't you? It's not an unfamiliar state. And here too, we begin again. We go, okay, you know. That's a little bit edgy, isn't it? And we remember that kind of balance. And we come back. So it really, it's very intertwined. And here, of course, we will name the role of equanimity and the force of equanimity as we practice. So it is possible and actually quite interesting to do loving kindness practice while walking. And again, walking doesn't have to physically mean walking. It means eyes open, some place where you're likely to encounter more people, creatures, you know, all kinds of beings, so that you are inviting awareness of all these different forms of life. So let's say you are walking. In loving kindness practice, you don't have to slow down. If you're in here, you might want to slow down just because of the circumstance, but it's fine to go outside and just walk, look normal, eyes open. And there are many styles and ways of doing this, so I'm going to tell you my favorite. And that is, as one walks along, rather than pay attention to the sensations of the movement, we're silently repeating certain phrases. And these phrases are the gathering point for our attention. Again, this can't be like a tight, exclusive focus, so you're just obsessed about these phrases, you know, and you can't notice anything going on around you. It's a very light awareness. It's like a touchstone. And what I like to do most is to have this baseline in the phrases of loving kindness toward myself. So I repeat some phrases, and I'll describe some in a minute, of loving kindness for myself. And I should emphasize silently, just like eyes open. It's a silent repetition of certain phrases. That way you can take it downtown if you want. And if a certain being comes strongly into consciousness, like someone walks by, or you hear a bird, or you hear a dog, or you see a bug, just quickly include them, like, oh, be happy. And then go back to the phrases for yourself. Now, especially if you're outside, well, even inside, because we've got these flies, there's a lot of life out there. And you don't want to be all jumbled, like, oh, be happy, be happy, be happy, be happy, you know. And so that's why I like to have this baseline of the phrases for myself. But it's quite fun just to include like that, like, oh, be happy. You know, someone comes by, you don't know if they're in this retreat or not. It's interesting. Be happy. You hear a dog, maybe you're afraid of dogs. But nonetheless, you include them, like, oh, be happy. You know, so you're not trying to force a certain feeling or perception, but you're just experimenting with your attention. Okay, so eyes open, walk at any pace. Silent repetition of certain phrases, I'd suggest largely for yourself. And then just play with including other beings as you notice them through one sense door or another. The phrases, in sitting, we tend to use three or four phrases. Sometimes in walking, that's too many, people find, so it's really up to you. I'd say like two to four, somewhere in there. And usually it's, well, the phrases in sitting, a translation, which we'll talk about much more when we come back, the phrases in sitting are often translated as, beginning with oneself, may I be safe, be happy, be healthy, live with ease. This last, may I live with ease, meaning in the things of day-to-day life, like livelihood and family, may not be such a struggle. May I live with ease. So you can use those four phrases when you walk. Or you might just do something like, may I be happy? May I be peaceful? Something like that. See if you can settle on certain phrases so that you can continue them throughout your practice. And it's basically that, just the silent repetition of these phrases and then just paying attention to these different forms of life.